and we're going.
So Ariel here is pretty happy that it's not her episode.
Yes, I got like maybe 4 hours sleep last night, and like I'm just really sore, and yeah, I've just been having a hard time sleeping, and I don't know why.
Well, you might be excited about Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My shoulders. They're sore from all this carry.
Yeah. So I've got a really cool topic for you guys today.
Ooh.
It's going back to my roots. It's another unsolved death. Oh. I need to specify that we don't know whether it was a homicide or a suicide.
Okay.
So yeah, we're talking about Cindy James.
Oh, you are so lucky I'm tired today because I know a lot about this one.
Yeah, this one's like a really famous one.
Yeah.
They did an episode of Unsolved Mysteries about it, and it's in all sorts of books. And like every podcast has done it, so I mean, it was going to get to us eventually.
Yeah. It also gives a lot of sources.
A lot of sources. But the first synchronicity that I found that I got really excited about was that she was found dead in June 1989, which is the month I was born in.
Aww.
Yeah. So, like, we're connected. And
birth death?
Birth death. She died, and I came to life, like, less than 20 days later. She was dead June 8th. That's when she was found.
Yeah, and then you were brought into this world.
Yeah, June 23rd.
Okay.
So, I mean, we might have passed each other on the, like, way in and out.
Who knows?
So she was found in the front yard of an abandoned home in Richmond.
Oh, that's nearby.
Yeah.
Very close by.
Richmond's the first town that I actually like moved to when I came out to Vancouver.
Whoa.
Synchronicities.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Coinky dinks.
But her death isn't even like the craziest part about this. It's really just like a minor incident that ended like almost 7 years of targeted abuse.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I probably don't need to act surprised because I know this already.
You don't. This is 7 years.
Yeah.
She was like, and it's like crazy stuff. Like it started with just phone calls. You're dead, bitch. And stuff like that. And then it really started to escalate. But let's go back
you should backtrack first.
Like, it really started about 4 months after Cindy got separated.
From her husband.
Who is a psychiatrist named Roy Makepeace. And they actually got together, like, when Cindy was 22?
Pretty young. So, yeah, early 20s.
Pretty young. And he was 19 years her senior, was married,
had
2 children,
mm-hmm.
like, fucking crazy. She, was he her doctor?
I don't think so. No, because they worked together, I think.
They worked
together. Because she was a nurse.
Yes.
Yeah.
But very much in controversy.
Because of the age difference.
And just, like, general appropriateness of
dating
your coworkers and, you know, an affair.
Yeah, that's what, I think that's, like, her parents really didn't approve of him.
Yeah.
Also, like, I remember one of the podcasts I've listened to about it, they mentioned that, like, before any of this, when she moved away from living with her parents and, like, to a different city and stuff, all of a sudden she like sent them a letter being like, my fiance died. They didn't even know she had a fiance.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird.
She's had a pretty strange, she was described as a bit histrionic and she kind of jumped to conclusions a lot. And made mountains out of molehills kind of thing.
Someone who creates their own drama, you might say.
You might say that. You might say that to various extremes.
Yeah, thrive on the drama. I can think of a few people like that.
I know tons of people like that. And they're always like the biggest victim too. Like, all this has happened to me.
Yep.
All this is...
Oh, yeah.
It's never my fault.
No, everyone else is the reason why these things are happening to me.
But anyways, they separated. separated. And fun fact, after they separated, Cindy moved on her own to a house near the Fraser Street graveyard.
Oh, I remember that from the podcast.
Yeah, that's really close.
That's near us.
Yeah, yeah.
As all of our listeners already know, I live near the graveyard.
It's kind of like influenced her quite a bit.
As long as I've lived on my own, out of my parents' place, I've lived near the graveyard.
I love that graveyard.
Yeah. I really do. I've been there so much, it's so pretty.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's going to be done up all nice around very soon at night, because Halloween and All Saints Day and all that jazz.
The Day of the Dead shrines are going to be out.
And I'll be able to check it out on the first.
Excellent.
Or on Halloween. I don't have anything to do that night.
So, yeah, the husband was a prime suspect in the case. But by all accounts, their separation was amicable and they remained friends. And there was even a time when they were like re-looking at...
Reconciling.
There's a little bit of that.
Or getting back together, basically.
Getting back together. Anyways, after they separated, she started getting phone calls. And some of them were just like empty calls. So you'd pick up, you wouldn't hear anything. Some of them were direct threats on her life. Some of them even made references to what she was doing. So she would like close the curtain and they say, "You think a curtain can stop me from getting to you?"
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they were pretty crazy. And this happened throughout the entirety of these like 7 years.
Man, it sounds like she's getting calls from Terry Driver.
I mean, the timelines.
Yeah. Oh no, what if this was like practice, or not practice round, but his first taste?
Maybe. Although this person's like really specifically
targeting her. Yeah.
Like very...
I was thinking more like the creepy phone call part.
Yeah. But it escalated past the phone calls.
True.
And they started to leave notes with like little cutout magazine letters. You know,
like you see in movies.
Yeah. Exactly like you see in movies. But it happened to her in real life. And her phone lines kept getting cut.
Ooh.
And this is one that hits me really hard. Within a 1 month period, Cindy found 3 strangled cats on her front door.
Why would you strangle a cat?
You're making a point.
Some cats are real jerks, so who knows, maybe like I know that a friend told me a story of one time his sister's cat like latched its claws into his face and used its back claws to kick and scratch his face for like 5 minutes straight.
God.
So some cats are jerks.
Some cats are jerks.
I hope my cat's not going to be a jerk.
It'd be really hard to find 3 jerk cats in a 1 month period.
Unless their owners don't want them anymore and you're taking them out for them.
Yeah, it could have been that, like, specialized. Honestly, I have no idea who did it.
Yeah, or they had, like, something terrible. Maybe their mother was killed by a cat, and so then they have, like, this vendetta against cats.
Just trying to think of like how a cat would kill a person. It would have to like...
It'd be very circumstantial. Like, sleeping,
and then the cat would have to like crawl up and like bite your jugular.
Or it could be like small things like, oh, the cat knocked some sort of like a cleaning fluid or something into your drink and then you drank it and then...
Oh, that dead. Would be crazy.
Yeah. Like, I feel like if a cat did kill someone, even if they wanted to, it would be very, like, accidental, just the way it would be possible.
Yeah. Well, cats don't want you to die. You give them food.
Although they... Now
they will eat you,
yeah, you
after
get,
you're dead.
You give them food in death, too, so they don't... They just don't care. They just care that you're a food source.
So this brings us to January 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And this is... the first alleged physical attack.
Okay.
So, when one of Cindy's friends, Agnes Woodstock, discovered that she was lying on the ground outside her house with a nylon stocking tied around her neck.
Hmm. What color was the stocking?
Black. This black stocking makes its way into every one of these attacks. It's really specific and weird.
If it was consensual, it would be kind of hot.
Right? Just like, tarred.
Yeah, but again, non-consensual, so...
No.
Clearly not a safe situation.
Cindy couldn't provide any details about her assailant. Police felt that she was withholding something, and Cindy later told her family that the attacker held a knife to her throat and threatened her mother and sister if she talked. So there's always this, like, this feeling of withholding information that the police had, which put a lot of suspicion on her.
Mm.
Now, we already know that she's, like, histrionic and kind of a drama queen.
So we could have a bit of a boy who cried wolf situation.
Yes.
Okay.
Although, there's a lot of... We'll get through all of the facts, and I really never could come to a conclusion.
Yeah, I remember, from what I know of it, it's, like, very hard to say.
Yeah. So the first police officer to the scene was Pat McBribe. He's a really interesting character to the case, because later on, he gets romantically involved with Cindy.
Oh,
and they even,
boy.
Like, move in together for a year. She's...
Yeah.
Really, like, up into the police here. They used a lot of money to investigate these things.
I feel like she needs, like, a really big dog.
She had a dog, and she used to walk it at night, like, 3 a.m. in the morning, even after these attacks were happening.
What?
yeah, she's a strange one.
Yeah, I mean, like, if she has a backyard... Just let your dog out to pee in the backyard at 3 a.m. I mean, I can understand if, like, you live in an apartment without any area, like I do. Because when we were dog sitting, we'd have to take the dog out for a walk right before bed. But even then, it would be, like, 11.
You can train a dog to move
get
on
to
a different time.
Yeah, it can live with your sleep schedule.
Yeah, you literally, it's just repetition. And eventually they'll get used to it.
Yeah.
So following this first attack, Cindy hired a private investigator, Ozzie Caban, who gave Cindy a two-way radio.
Mm-hmm.
In January 1984, he started to hear strange noises on the radio and ran to Cindy's house to investigate. He busted down, like, the locked door, and he found Cindy... Oh, this one's crazy, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. She's on the floor. She's got a threatening note... That is pinned to her
hand. Oh, I remember this one.
With a paring knife, like,
yeah.
Right through her hand.
Yeah, like, legit horror movie stuff.
Legit horror movie stuff.
Or, like, mob stuff.
Yeah. Or even, like, Hook, when you had, like, the note stabbed into the door.
Yeah.
That's what I thought of immediately when I read this. I was like, yeah, like, Hook, only in their hand. It's fucking crazy.
What if the mob was after her? Or a gang?
I feel like we would have some, like, specific
evidence.
Motives. Like, she would, after all this, she would point to a specific gang or mafia. Like,
but she was known for getting that feeling of withholding information.
It's true. And, you know, she never, nobody ever saw a face of her attackers. And sometimes it would be one person, or two, or three.
Oh.
Depending on when it was.
Yeah.
So, Cindy claimed that she'd seen a man entering her house's front gate, and then she was struck from behind on the head with an object. But, in spite of this, there was no evidence of forced entry.
Mmm.
Ever, actually. So, whoever did this must have had access to her house.
Or really good at picking locks.
Yeah. Like, really good.
Like a policeman good.
I don't know if policemen are good at picking
or
locks.
Or a private detective good.
Maybe. I should also mention that whenever police surveillance was happening, you'd never hear from the attackers. So the phone call stopped except for that one that Pat McBribe would have heard, which was literally just picking up and silence.
Mm.
But never any physical attacks. And then when the surveillance stopped, which was like a really huge expense on the police, she would get attacked almost like immediately after.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of skepticism is on her.
Yeah.
Making up these attacks, which is really, really crazy. Like she's doing it for attention, maybe.
Yeah.
But even still, a lot of the things just don't make sense.
Oh, another wacko theory. What if she had, like, one of those people who, like, lives in people's attics and stuff and for years without them really noticing? So then they'd know when there was police surveillance and stuff, and whenever she moved, they just followed and moved into that attic or something. So then...
It really could be.
Yeah.
Like, it...
When you read about those kinds of stories that, like, have actually happened, it's pretty unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's so specific to her.
Mm-hmm.
They were constantly watching her. They were watching what was happening. They were following her when she moved. You know, it's so much that the police and a lot of people believe that it was her.
I could see that. 'Cause, yeah.
So, in December 1985, we have another attack. Cindy disappeared and was found in a ditch 6 miles from her home. Again, with the black nylon stocking wrapped around her neck, cuts and bruises all over her body, and now she is suffering from, like, hypothermia.
And was she, like, stripped down? Was she clothed? I would guess she was naked if it's hypothermia, but...
I don't have that information, but I'm gonna go with she just didn't have enough...
Clothes on
and was okay. Left out in the cold.
Yeah, that naked would be kind of the sort of thing they'd include probably in the articles and stuff.
But it gets really cold in December here.
And depends wet. On the year. Yeah, wet. Yeah.
Wet is a like really big thing that could...
Yeah.
So at this point, Cindy decides, like, enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving and I'm changing my name. So,
oh, yeah. I remember this part.
So beforehand, she was Cindy Hack, which is like her maiden name.
Yep.
And now she's Cindy James. Yay.
Kept the same first name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the best, but maybe she really liked her name.
Maybe. Just if you're going to go through the trouble to try and get people to not find you.
Yeah. So she moves into a new house, and now she's got friends staying with her. What? She's now in a new house, and she's got friends staying with her. Agnes and Tom Woodcock.
Okay. Woodcock.
Yeah.
I feel like we've had someone with that last name, like, as a character in one of our stories before, and I laughed.
Oh, very likely. Woodcock. So they were staying at the house, and the burglar alarm went off, and they discovered that the glass window from Cindy's basement door had been removed. But there were also witnesses, because they saw that Cindy was with them when the alarm went off, so she couldn't have staged that incident herself. She would have needed help.
Okay.
Or an attacker.
Hmm.
And again, in April 1986, they were staying at Cindy's house, and they discovered that the basement was on fire.
What?
Yeah. And the phone lines were cut, and...
That's...
It's huge. It's huge.
Because that, like, a lot of people could have died, not just Cindy, if that fire had gotten out of hand.
That's right. At least 3 people.
Yeah.
So they went outside, and they saw a neighbor, and Tom asked this neighbor to call the fire department, and he ran away. So... My favorite murder, they talked about this point, that the man could have run to get help.
Yeah. Because
no cell phones, you gotta go find a landline.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah. So I wanna come back to that point, that if he did go call to ring for help.
Yeah.
Then they would have had record of the 911 call.
Oh, snap. Yep.
So, tough to say.
Yeah. Less benefits, doubts, etc.
But, you know, he could have just ran away because fires are scary.
That's true.
And it's not like this was somebody that Tom could recognize, or else he would have been pointed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was also, like, a composite sketch made
by Cindy's
attacker. So I feel like if the composite sketch and this guy matched up, they would have known. But we also know that composite sketches are, like, completely unreliable.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to the Abbotsford killer.
The Terry Driver episode again.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
A lot of mysterious points. At this point, they actually, like, put Cindy into the hospital to see if she's, like...
Mentally unstable? Yeah. I remember this part, too.
They're specifically looking for multiple personality disorder, which... Heavily disputed
and
that it exists.
Also, now it's, dissociative identity disorder, I do believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they changed the name. I remember studying it in high school psychology class and watching it was either a made-for-TV movie or an actual movie, Sybil.
How do you feel about it? Do you think dissociative personality disorder?
I'm not sure. Very hard to say.
Like, I've always heard that it's a way to cope with trauma.
I can see that.
Create a new personality, and that person can take on all the trauma, and you don't have to be there.
Yeah.
While it's happening to you.
It's like the only thing I know of it is from, like, movie twists and tropes.
Which, yeah.
And, like, this really bad video game I watched a friend stream recently called Deadly Premonition. One of the twists is that, the main character has two personalities. But for some reason his, like, hair and eye color change with the personality, and, like, the real one. All of a sudden his hair is, like, ghostly white and his eyes are all weird, and it's like, what the fuck?
I don't think that's what was happening.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and the person streaming that was one of our patrons.
Oh yeah.
Recommended playing.
Oh, wicked.
You got a second shout out.
There you go. See, I always remember, like, Me, Myself, and Irene.
Oh, yeah. I never saw that.
It's not worth it.
No. No.
It's not good, and it's not accurate any respect.
If we can spoil movies, there's one that I think of.
What movie is it? Does it deserve to get spoiled?
It's a decent movie.
Is it Split?
No. It's got John Cusack in it.
I don't know it.
I'm going to have to say it now.
Yeah,
but now you're going to know the
twist.
You
made a whole bit about it, so
okay,
you might as well.
It's the movie Identity.
Oh. Well, it's spoiled in the name.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
So, I mean, the multiple personality disorder was heavily pushed by the police.
Yeah.
But psychiatrist at the hospital does not believe this to be the case.
Okay.
However, we do have some weird things, like she volunteered polygraph test twice, and they both came back, like, inconclusive, and, like, she was holding back information.
Yeah.
So after her release from the hospital, Cindy started accusing her ex-husband, Roy Makepeace, of being her tormentor, and he had to take a polygraph test, and they determined that he wasn't lying, and he wasn't... But, of course, polygraph tests are not admissible in court because they're wildly inaccurate and can be put up... Actually, he didn't even take the polygraph test because he had heart medication that they said would interfere with it.
And, like, also, polygraph tests, they only test whether you believe what you're saying. Like,
yeah.
And also, they can be cheated if you, like, know what they measure, which a psychiatrist might.
Yeah. No, totally would.
Yeah.
But shortly after she accuses him of being the tormentor, and remember that they had been, like, pretty friendly beforehand, and he was worried about her and all of this, Roy receives a creepy answering machine message, and this is all over the place, so I think I can edit it into this episode, and I'll let you guys hear it.
How'd you like it? What did you think?
Yeah.
I've heard it so I remember what
you know,
it sounded like,
yeah.
And how it sounded like a woman.
Yeah, it sounds like a woman. Kind of.
Yeah. Like, it sounded like a woman putting on a voice.
It says that. Cindy, dead meat.
Yeah, I know.
I thought you were going to do it for the thing.
But they just heard it.
Yeah.
Why would I do it if they heard the real thing?
I don't know. But police found no evidence that Roy was responsible for tormenting Cindy. And a lot of people believe that she left the message herself. Although, if the message did come from a woman, there's another third party who got scorned in their whole marriage.
Oh, the ex-wife?
Maybe.
But why would she wait until after they'd separated?
I don't know. But that's another thing to put out there into the ethos of
Or this. How old were his kids?
Yeah, I have no idea. So, October 26th, 1988, 2 weeks after Roy received the message, Cindy was found unconscious in her car, hogtied with her hands and feet tied behind her back, naked from the waist down, again with the black nylon stocking tied around her neck, and no memory of what happened. So, this is our last physical attack.
Well, not the last.
The second to last, technically.
Yeah.
But at this point, she
the
made...
The last one she survives.
Yeah. Last one she survives. And at this point, she's made like 90 calls to the police. This is the fifth of the attacks.
So they're probably sick of her at this point.
They're totally sick of her. They spent so much money on her.
Yeah.
And on May 25th, 1989, Cindy disappears from a shopping mall parking lot. So they find her car. It's got blood on the driver's side door, items from her wallet scattered underneath, and she's nowhere to be found until 2 weeks later.
Okay, so that's concerning.
Yeah.
Well, very concerning because that's a dead body.
This is a dead body.
Yeah.
So this is Cindy James. We're now at 1989, June 8th, and...
100% officially dead.
100% officially dead. Her hands and feet were tied behind her back. She's got the black nylon stocking tied around her neck. But the autopsy reveals that she died of a morphine overdose.
Oh yeah, because there were puncture marks in her previously.
Yes, there were puncture marks. However, after a very... very expensive and long inquiry with many, many experts, we find that the puncture marks weren't the injection of morphine. She has puncture marks, and then she's orally taken morphine, and that's what's killed her.
Mm. But, like, weren't there puncture marks on her from previous attacks?
And yes.
So
she was attacked and drugged in previous attacks. So morphine is not like the... This is not her first experience with morphine, even.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't it like something she was prescribed as well or something like that?
I didn't read that one.
Okay. I might just be remembering something that's fake. So, yeah. So don't take that as fact, people.
No. She was hogtied, and one expert showed how you could tie your hands up in front of you and then... put them under your legs and have them behind your back. So, but that doesn't really make sense to this whole thing because she would have had morphine that she took in the pills. She would have had to put in a fake needle mark and then tie her hands behind her back and then mysteriously appear in this front yard. A front yard. So people walk past this. And 2 weeks later...
Was she found in Richmond, though?
Yes. In Richmond.
Was she in a ditch?
In a yard.
No, but like most of the front yards have ditches because they need it for the drainage. And the ditches are pretty deep and get overgrown.
I didn't have any pictures of the house, but the family does not believe that she would have put herself there and not been found.
Yeah.
So that idea is very unlikely and they heavily contested. Like, she's not going to be waiting there for 2 weeks. People walking past and not see her.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, because also she was previously tied up with her hands tied behind her back to her feet, right?
Yeah.
So that, like, how can you even do that? Because
it would be very, very difficult. Like, she would have needed an accomplice.
Or to be, like, the world, like, an escape artist, practically.
Yeah. And, I mean, what this is, like, a really extreme thing to do to yourself.
Yeah.
To gain
attention.
Attention. And it would have taken a lot of planning and effort.
And, like, if someone wanted to do this kind of torment and stuff to someone, the perfect person to target is someone who's got a tendency to over-exaggerate things, and it makes them less credible for...
And she seems like the kind of person who would attract a lot of...
Peculiar...
Attention.
Yeah.
Like, already she's getting into questionable relationships.
Yep.
And it's, like, fast-moving relationships, right? Like, she's attaching to these people, like, really strongly, really quickly. And, you know, they're not working out. So we have, like, lots of people around her who, even, like, not knowing the rest of her life, could be potential harassers. We have her husband, her ex-husband.
I don't think her estranged husband... I guess, might be.
Right, they didn't actually divorce, they only separated.
Yeah.
So we have him, we have the cop, who, this makes a lot of sense because he would have understood a lot of what they're investigating and what they're looking for. Because he's a first responder, and so he would have also known, like, the surveillance going on around her, which makes a lot of sense for why they stopped. And then we also have Cindy herself, who... There is a lot of evidence to pointing to that she could have done this to herself. Just peculiar timing and the fact that nobody else around her ever saw
anything.
They always just found the aftermath of the attacks. And then there's lots of questions of her mental state. Like, was this just a reaction to something that happened, like, very early on, in terms of, like, the phone calls, and maybe she just wanted people to believe her that this was happening, or maybe she wasn't even aware that she was doing this to herself.
Yeah, or it could be that, like, maybe some stuff did happen at the beginning and she got a bunch of attention for it and
was addicted.
Yeah,
like, hooked, and so it escalates.
Yeah, because didn't she even, like, go on the news or something to talk about what had happened to her?
I believe so. Like, yeah. We've got lots and lots. Like, she was one of the most expensive autopsies. They had experts from everywhere. Like, in Vancouver history, this is, like, one of the most expensive investigations. And, of course, the ongoing investigation of the attacks was also very expensive with the surveillance. And she even had to... She had her own private investigator, and they never found anything. And
haven't they officially declared it a suicide?
No.
No? Okay, so it's still like
the
a
coroner
suspicious
ruled
death.
Her whatever. Death was not suicide, an accident, or a murder, and that she died of an unknown event.
That's, like, such a non-answer.
It is not an answer.
It's like
it is
just saying
least
she
satisfying.
Died.
Yeah. That's why I was really, like, intrigued by this. Because it's not... Well, I can't even say that it was a homicide or a suicide. This is a mysterious, unsolved death.
Yeah. Or, like, that she might have had a lover that they liked to do kinky stuff with that she... didn't want to talk about, that then just something happened.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, part of the kink was getting the police involved.
Maybe.
And she was hiding, like, oh man, there's so much.
So many possibilities!
Anything could have happened here. There's, like, so many. Like, that cop, Pat McBride, he was later convicted for 2 counts of sexual assault in unrelated cases.
That's...
I know.
Alarming.
Yeah, that's alarming.
Like, really alarming.
And he had this big inappropriate relationship with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have lots of weird... I mean, even the psychiatrist, her...
Yeah, so it's like, who knows, maybe she wasn't as out there as people thought, because he could be...
driving her towards.
Yeah. Manipulating to... and...
Yeah. There's...
Knowing all the right words of what to call her to other people to make them question things.
Yeah. It's really wild. And I don't have any satisfying things I can point to. I can't say in any certainty what it was or who it was. And a lot of people, like, they come into the articles and they have, like, no, it was this, it was this, it was this. But there's always, like, contradicting evidence. And I love it. Absolutely. I'm completely fascinated by this case. Ariel actually gave me, like, extra time to research this, and she recommended the two podcasts, Dark Poutine and My Favorite Murder, did a really good, like, heavily detailed podcast on this.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm doing my references now.
Yeah.
So the two podcasts were, like, really strong. There's a really good Reddit that just, it's a mess, actually. It's a giant,
yeah,
just
is cluster of... Is there such thing as a good Reddit?
This one had, like, the original post was a pretty, like, concise
with sources.
Timeline with sources. But then you get, like, all the comments, which is, like, new facts and new things. And just, like, crazy shit being thrown in every which way. So, I mean, if you'd like a lot of information that's just raw and all over the place and unhelpful. Reddit.
Yeah, organization not required.
Cindy's sister actually has a website.
Ooh.
About the whole affairs and deals and whatnot. So her website is called melaniehack.com. So that's MelaniehackHack.com. This is actually the place where you can download and listen to the voicemail that I
played
and put in, even though I haven't done that yet. But, you know.
The listener's experience will have experienced it already.
Exactly. And then unsolved.com had a pretty decent, like, quotes. A lot of different quotes from the experiences. So, yeah, that was my... My time. That was a great,
yeah, great case. Like, that's like your most researched one yet, I feel like.
I went really hard into Janet Smith.
Yeah, but there wasn't as much information to put in the podcast, you know?
No. This one is probably my longest page of notes.
Yes.
Just
yes,
a little bit under three.
Join three me in pages. The too many notes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess... Do you want to just keep it quicker for a sign-off today?
Yes, but do we have to thank...
We have to thank someone, yes. Yes. We've got a new patron.
And it's Mommy Hansen.
Mama Hansen. Denise herself. Thanks, Mom.
Thank you. It's really great to have your support.
Yes.
You've also given us books and recommendations for cases. So we're really happy to have you as part of our patrons.
Welcome to the club. The exclusive club of the bad cookies.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's...
I don't think we have very much in the upcoming.
Yeah. That we know we're allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
Axe Wound Film Fest is in Vermont in November, so Nepenthes will be playing there. Off the top of my head, that's all I can think of.
Yeah. By the time this comes out, we'll have already played in Whistler Heavy Hitting Horror Fest.
And in the Weird Film Fest in San Francisco.
Excellent.
Yeah. So if you want to find us on the interwebs, you can look up Bad Cookie Pictures on any of the social medias.
Yep.
We're on there.
You'll find us.
Yeah. Except Snapchat. I don't like Snapchat. And you can find me on some of the social medias as @HansensHorror.
And you can find me on Instagram @SneezingWolf.
Yeah, no, my head is killing me. I think that's about it. So, do you just stay creepy?
Stay creepy.